executive producer and engineer behind Newsbeat, the incredible new podcast series that blends journalism, spoken word narrative, music and media clips, and featured artists, touching upon important issues from an angle that others aren't going to take. So what we wanted to do was bring you this, which is Backbeat, the behind-the-scenes look at Newsbeat. We'll be doing this for each of our specific episodes, but to let you guys know who we are, why we're doing this, and why it's so important, we wanted to start off with this initial Backbeat episode. I'm going to introduce some of the players in this Newsbeat team, and we'll get a little bit of background information from everybody, and then we're just going to kick it and let you guys know why we're doing this. First and foremost, let's talk to our managing editor, Rashed Mian. What up, Rashed?
Hey, Manny. So everybody, as he said, I'm Rashed Mian. I'm the managing editor of Newsbeat. Like you'll find out, we all have journalism backgrounds. So I came from Long Island Press, and I covered civil liberties, the Muslim American community, crime, politics. So a unique blend of things in the journalism world. Yeah, we're really excited about Newsbeat and some of the stories that we've been covering in the past. We're going to bring in the podcast format, and we think you'll like it.
That's what's up. Chris Towarski, our editor-in-chief, the chieftain.
What up, Manny? Welcome, everybody. Really excited. As Manny and Rashed said, this is our introduction. We hope to challenge widely held narratives out there and expose the truth.
That's it. It's definitely about challenging narratives and making sure that lesser voices are amplified. Newsbeat is really the brainchild of the founder, our grand poobah around here at Mori Publishing, the man with the vision and the plan, Mr. Jed Mori. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you for putting this together. I'm going to start actually by going back to Chris Towarski, who will rarely put himself inside the narrative, but because this is a narrative behind the scenes, the inaugural Backbeat to kick off the show, I think it's important to know that Chris Towarski is probably the most decorated journalist, certainly on Long Island, which is where we're all based, where we originally came from. Our team has been together in different iterations for the better part of the last 15 years. And that was the first thing that I wanted to kind of bring forward today is the fact that this is not a ragtag collection of people that are, you know, highly disciplined at what they do and came together to, you know, from different backgrounds to put this podcast together. This is a very, very deliberate effort that we have created and been formulating over the last couple of years while we were together producing an alternative publication. Chris Towarski was the editor-in-chief of that publication. He's a Columbia grad from the journalism school. He's actually part of the very first class of the investigative journalism class at Columbia Journalism School and performed so well in that class and came out so decorated that they actually brought him back on a full ride to go get his MA. That's going to be important as we start to analyze other projects down the road, just as it's important to know that Rashed Mian is not just a great beat reporter. He's really a much bigger piece of our larger narrative of Newsbeat and Mori Publishing, which is the company that founded Newsbeat. We started to break out of the alternative publishing realm when we started reporting on stories that people would say to us, why are you guys doing this?
From Long Island.
Who are you guys again? And over time, we started to feel sort of shackled by the artificial constraints of a name like Long Island Press. We were doing stories that had national impact, national significance. We were reporting on the ground, and hopefully they'll talk a little bit about it. But, you know, we were there for the first days of the Occupy Wall Street movement and providing probably some of the best color and narrative that you could possibly get at that time before all the mainstream media started to come in and co-opt the stories. Well, that led to investigations into the surveillance and security state, which, you know, eventually found Chris and Rashed, you know, these two guys, down as one of only a handful of reporters covering the daily trial of Chelsea Manning. Things like that that we've done over the years that we never really got the credit or the breadth of coverage that we could have gotten by being locked into the Long Island Press, which was a very robust alternative publication.
Also well decorated over the years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we won, and this is not a session that's meant to be, you know, just sitting here patting ourselves on the back all day, but we want people to understand that we have some serious credentials in the journalism world. And that brings us right back to the other side of the table here, which is Manny Faces has been part of our corporate team for also the past 15 years. Most people in the hip-hop community know who he is from his reporting. He's actually the founder of Birthplace Magazine and the New York Hip Hop Report. So people in the hip-hop community have known Manny Faces as a personality, as a sort of a celebrity journalist of sorts in that field. But he's also a journalist and a writer and an engineer and a multimedia producer with a very diverse skill set. Without these backgrounds, without Chris sitting on the SEC desk, at, you know, the financial desk at the Washington Post after he graduated from Columbia, Rashed creating all these groundbreaking stories about the Muslim American community and civil liberties in general, and Manny Faces having access to the larger, broader world of hip hop, you know, we never could have brought this together. And it would have been very difficult, even with the vision that we had for this, to create something like Newsbeat without the core skill sets that the people at this table have. So that's really part of the rationale behind why we launched Newsbeat, why we think that we have the integrity and the chops to really pull this off. And it's an exciting time for us. And we hope, obviously, everybody enjoys it as much as we love working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when we talk about the kind of stories that we've covered in our tenure as newspaper / online publication reporters, we found that a lot of the topics that we've been covering that you mentioned were alternative in nature, but incredibly important issues to shed light on. Should we give some examples of stuff that we've looked at in the past?
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, maybe Rashed can speak to the AUMF as an example and something that we might actually touch on in a not too future episode.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about AUMF, which the general public doesn't really know about, it's called the Authorization to Use Military Force. And it was a law basically passed 6 days after the September 11 attacks, which approved military efforts against the perpetrators of 9/11. And that law is still on the books today, and it's very controversial because it's being used to justify not only the original effort to go after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, but it's been used to go after the so-called Islamic State currently. It's justified America's increasing drone war. It's justified the slaying of American citizens in other countries. And only now is there potential conversation happening about whether the original AUMF is outdated. So these are stories like that we were reporting on Long Island, which Long Islanders still need to know about. But it, you know, it's something that mainstream outlets should have been covering, and they really weren't. And that's why when American citizens continue to see bombs being dropped across basically seven countries now, no one's really talking about, hey, is this legal? And, you know, those are the things that we try to pinpoint, these stories that no one's really discussing, but it's, you know, has massive significance when you're talking about war and the legality of it, and how Congress, under the Constitution, is the only branch of government that has the power to actually declare war. So there's things like that that we try to report on. And now, so basically with Newsbeat, we're taking these stories, existing stories that we've worked on, some other stories that we just recently learned about, and we're going to expand on it in this format, which we think is fun. It'll be exciting, especially with the music element that we'll have. And, you know, it's not just music that we're going to have in there. We're going to have incredibly talented artists actually expressing their opinion through their lyrics. So they're going to be able to touch on this stuff in a very journalistic way themselves. So AUMF, and, you know, Chris could talk about other stories too, but we hope we could get these out to a larger audience now.
Well, before we talk about the format of the show, which I think will be important for us to break down, the rationale behind why we did it, how long the show is going to be, the nitty-gritty, the ins and the outs of the actual production of the show. Chris, if you should talk about one example that you had in a story that Chris literally worked on for 10 straight years to free a man who was wrongfully accused of a very heinous crime. What I take from that is, and he can talk a little bit about the story itself, but what I take from that is he worked for that for 10 years. He worked toward that, and then ultimately it was his reporting and his work that laid the foundation for not his exoneration yet, but him being actually released from prison 10 straight years. That's part of the lost art that we see in journalism today, is that in the era of 24/7 news cycles, in the era of clickbait and, you know, so-called fake news and people just taking the surface level headline analysis of a story and then creating some sort of composite understanding inside their own echo chamber, nobody's ever taking the time to dig deep and realize how hard it is to practice journalism.
You know, Newsbeat to me is an extension of this brand of investigative journalism, truth-telling, you know, that we made the core of what we did at the Long Island Press. You know, just a little bit of history. I mean, at one point, the Long Island Press was the sixth largest alt-weekly in the country, you know, and we prided ourselves on being the voice of the voiceless, shining a light, telling the stories that no one else would. As a sample, I mean, we exposed how a toxic plume was contaminating people's drinking water. We exposed an atomic waste dump with workers unsuspectingly working on top of it and falling ill with rare cancer. A series of our stories on heroin inspired the creation of a law of drug sales awareness in the county.
And you think about the opioid addiction epidemic that is central in all national news outlets right now. I mean, we were talking about that quite literally 7 years ago on Long Island before anybody wanted to admit that heroin was an issue, let alone opioids, right? I mean, just incredible.
Right. I mean, and now it's a national and global epidemic. We, another series of ours took down and got convictions for three top deputies in the county police department here for squashing an internal investigation into one of their wealthy benefactors' sons. You know, we could go on and on, but that's the type of journalism, that's the type of impact that we hope to bring to Newsbeat on a national and global scale. I mean, and it's, you know, and as Jed brought up earlier, I mean, it's sort of a natural progression for us. You know, Rashad and I, you know, we were down in at NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, you know, one of the few journalists down there covering the court-martial of then Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, the largest whistleblower of the largest classified leaks in U.S. history, which, you know, at the core exposed some very horrible things that were going on that the mainstream media just, for one reason or another, wasn't the main story they were reporting. You know, just to go back to what Jed was saying about the case for 10 years, let's talk about wrongful convictions. You know, the deeper you look into it, and it most likely will be a future episode of Newsbeat, possibly up to 10 to 20% of those incarcerated in the U.S. should not be there. This was a case where Ronald Bauer was arrested and convicted for a series of sodomies and rapes, up to two dozen cases. And when you look at the evidence, it looks like he didn't do it.
And this was in New York, by the way. This was in Queens and part of Nassau County.
And in fact, you know, the evidence points that most likely it was a police officer who did these. Through our reporting over the years, as Jed said, you know, we'd like to think that we helped get his release, which is another whole story in itself. I mean, the only conviction review board set up in New York, the only case that they looked at was this case. And the chief of that department wrote to the parole board and said, Ronald Bauer, quote, likely did not commit these crimes. So the parole board was caught in a tough spot where they had to release someone but not exonerate him. So now you have someone trying to live under all the restrictions of the label of a level three sexual predator. So again, this is just a sample of the things we've done in the past and that we hope to bring to the table now in this, what I like to call an investigative multimedia podcast, you know, challenging the narratives out there, hopefully rectifying some of them along the way.
So let's talk about the format a little bit. And this is where, you know, I came to Manny, oh man, about a year and a half ago. And I had this thing rolling around in my mind that I really couldn't, you know, it's one of those things that keeps you up at night. It's like, I know that there's a way to do this better. We were looking at the, you know, again, so the news is all upside down. The credibility of journalism was being attacked across the globe. and these, you know, so-called purveyors of truth that were, you know, part of the Murdoch Empire or, you know, part of the some of these other, you know, failed enterprises like the New York Times. I mean, everybody was being called into question, and our politics was toxic. It just seemed like the whole world was kind of crumbling, especially if you're in the news business. You know, so here we are. It's like we are the salmon swimming against the worst tide possible as local alternative media journalists. I mean, you talk about feeling like you cannot break through, that you are just positively invisible. That's how we felt. Everything that we did had integrity. Everything that we did had a greater purpose and a greater mission. We were always trying to break through. And so I came to Manny and I said, you know, your world, our world, we have to figure this out. My kids just saw Hamilton. I did not see Hamilton. They got to go see Hamilton, which is insulting unto itself, but it sort of triggered something in me and actually reminded me, my wife, when she first came to New York from Boston, was the original music director of something called Schoolhouse Rock Live when it came to Off-Broadway. And for those of us of a particular age, we'll remember Schoolhouse Rock on television was the way as a kid that you learned really important things through music. So, you know, my wife had this background. My then 13-year-old daughter all of a sudden knew more about the founding of this country than I did, you know, because she had memorized all of the lyrics to Hamilton. And I said, this is the way that we can communicate with this generation. This is how we break beyond social media and Snapchat and 5 seconds of an image that, you know, to make an impression and all the clickbait headlines. How can we get our message out and infuse it with music and artistry? And there has to be a way to maintain our journalistic integrity and convey these messages through something that younger people but really anybody is willing to consume. You look at the success of Hamilton, for example. I mean, it was, you know, from kids to grandparents that were just so blown away by the mechanism of teaching history in a way that nobody thought was possible. African-American actors and actresses rapping their way through a 2-hour something musical, not being the color of the people that they were portraying. I mean, just it was like it threw everything upside down, right?
Or the audience.
What's that?
Or the main audience.
Or the main audience, that's right. So, you know, I came to Manny with that, and he said, yeah, I feel you. I do. And that's when he suggested that we start to bring artists into play, and the format from there started to evolve. I mean, maybe you could talk about a little bit about how what you were thinking at the time and how we ultimately came to craft this type of narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. For several years, as moonlighting, I founded Birthplace Magazine. I started covering hip-hop music and culture in and around New York City and the surrounding areas. Another area that I thought was ignored by hip-hop media, which had moved on to other parts of the country and, you know, where the money was, they followed sort of the industry and left a void in coverage, and coupled with the overall decline of journalism in the entertainment business and as we know in the news business, there just wasn't a lot going on. But when I started sticking my nose around, being an old hip hop head, a DJ, a producer, a retired rapper, I started noticing that there were a number of people using hip hop in very inventive ways. And I certainly wanted to tell the stories and bring to light some of the independent artists and rappers and DJs and producers in the area. But I also started really paying attention to folks who were doing things that I didn't realize the depth of. And I certainly didn't think that most of the general public knew about. So I had already spent some time looking at hip hop theater. Before Hamilton came around, you know, there's been people doing this for years. Baba Brinkman, who's out of Canada but often puts on shows in New York City. Camilla Forbes at the High Arts Center. These were people that were doing hip-hop theater already, merging fields of fine art, music, hip-hop to get a message across or to get a different take on an old story or whatever the case may be, different form of storytelling. So as a journalist, I'm loving this because I get to write about it. I would come back over here and I'd, you know, tell these tales of things that I've discovered.
So many tales.
Yes, so many tales. Because there was so much going on. I got involved with some of them. I just really found a special place in my heart for this type of work. So when we talked about podcasts, and I had done a podcast for a long time. I had done an interview style podcast. I'd done the New York Hip Hop Report. And I was doing some 4 or 5 years ago. It was a little bit before it was the thing. Hip hop podcasts are a big thing, you know, now. Shouts to Combat Jack and Juan Epstein and Nori's Drink Champs. These are very well received podcasts that deal with hip hop. And of course, these great journalism podcasts are now finding a way to bring real news to the forefront, The Intercepted and things like that. To find a way to put all of that together, you know, was instantly appealing to me. I knew the success of Hamilton, and I obviously had seen that many people, like your children, can learn from this. It's an enjoyable way to learn. It's edutainment in its best form. I knew a slew of artists.
Well, let's hang on that for a second, because It wasn't just about, you know, once we started to get the idea of what the formula could look like, Part of the linchpin of this is to find artists that can bring their artistry to the table And work it into this format. I think one of the things that's been surprising to me is when you sort of peel back the entertainment curtain and you look behind it, one of the richest things in hip hop, I'm not a hip hop head, you know, this is not my area of expertise at all. But when you pull the curtain back and you start to get into it, you realize that the birth of hip hop really does come from a very socioeconomic and spiritual place. And that the evolution of the artists that Manny's bringing to the table, you know, particularly from New York that we're talking to in these initial stages, they all have deep-seated causes, meaning behind a lot of the work that they do. They are breaking through in the same way that, you know, somebody that in the 60s when we would have, you know, looked at a lot of the people that have come, the voices of the anti-establishment, anti-war movement in the 60s. Yeah. Hip-hop has been doing this all along. And the artists that you're bringing to the table, learning about them, for me, is one of the great joys because, you know, we know our thing, right? I'm looking at Chris and Rashed. You know, we've been locked in our own prism for a little while. And to dip into Manny's world and see that this makes more sense than people realize. The convergence of the hip-hop culture and the artistry that comes from beneath it and why it's there into the type of journalism that we do couldn't be more natural.
Right.
It sounds strange to put them together into a podcast and claim that this is journalism and, you know, not some sort of, you know, corrupted art form.
Or some gimmicky approach.
Which
is something that
this is, you know, real. This is
advocates
natural.
Of hip-hop want to make sure it doesn't happen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
But this is not that.
Yeah, and I'm going to echo something that Jed said because it's been an eye-opener for me, too, to listen to some of these artists that Manny's been listening to for years now and to hear the messages that they're trying to get across. I guess we were too busy investigating stories while he was talking about it in the office. But it's been incredible, and I think that's why it's exciting because for listeners, I think it's going to be an eye-opener for them as well to hear these voices and to hear what they have to say and just how emotional it is and just to hear how they use this platform to get across some of these important messages. It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, I was putting together a blog post on this right now that one of the most eye-opening things for me most recently was when Manny couldn't make it to a portion of Left Forum. Left Forum is an event hosted in the city that basically I call it like, you know, Marxist Disneyland. It's it's the best place ever for progressives. You could just totally go down the rabbit hole for 2.5 straight days with everybody that we would consider like a superstar in the progressive world. And I sat in on a session called Hip Hop versus Neoliberalism. And when we first got that, you remember we were downloading all the sessions in the office and we're like, wow.
That's a thing?
Really? It should be sponsored by Newsbeat. Like, are they listening to us? This is incredible. And I sat down and I sat through a session with the guys that are good friends of Manny's, Rebel Diaz. It's Rod Stars and G1, right?
That's right.
From Rebel Diaz.
Yes, indeed.
And
RDAC.
Okay.
Ardac in the house.
Ardac in the house.
Rebel Diaz Arts Collective. For many years, they had a studio. They had a workshop that they brought youth from the neighborhood. They taught them, you know, life skills. They taught them music production. You know, for years, they've been doing that.
For years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and then at the end of the session, Stickman from Dead Prez comes in. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I am completely a fish out of water at this point. And I'm sitting through one of the most raw, real, and erudite presentations on the origins of hip hop and how it relates to the birth of neoliberal policies in South America. And I'm like, it was so mind-blowing. But, you know, what I gleaned from that was this community has so much to offer intellectually, politically, socioeconomically. I mean, you name it. They have been speaking and shouting about this for years through great art and in a way that really hasn't broken through to, obviously, a lot of America. And so it's, listen, as a middle-aged white guy, it's great for me to be able to dip into this world and then to bring our sensibilities to the table as well, to report from a different perspective and be part of this great convergence, because I feel like this is a time that it makes sense for these two things to come together. Mm. One thing that I do want to bring out, though, is that, you know, for us in our journey here, so we've been together for a long time. We've been, I've been with Chris now for 16 years, I think it is. Maybe even a little 16 plus, right? Manny, same amount of time. Rashed, you came in.
It's been about six, seven years,
right?
Yeah. It doesn't count the 2 years as an intern where Chris kept me in the office until midnight.
And, it doesn't? Know, yeah, that doesn't count?
It does not count.
Okay. Well, you know, we all have our path. For me, this journey really started, though, in Zuccotti Park, actually with the four of us.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, so this incredible national thing is happening and unfolding, and it's in our backyard.
Let's just go.
As local journalists, that that shit doesn't happen. You know, you don't get that kind of opportunity because usually the action's happening somewhere else. And in the very beginning, not a lot of people realized, first of all, people didn't think it would stay. People didn't think it would stick. They didn't think it would become a national phenomenon. I didn't think certainly protests would erupt in the same name all across the country and then the world. Mm. And that maybe the Arab Spring was partially emboldened by this, you know, this awakening that was happening. There's a lot of people out there that cast aspersions on the Occupy movement, and a lot of it is justified. But one thing that the Occupy movement did in our minds is it codified a new progressive language. The idea of inequity, the idea of the 99%, the top 1% unfairly gaining the advantage and holding it systemically and preventing classes from moving up, preventing people from accessing their normal, you know, natural civil liberties and rights. These things came out and became part of our national discourse and the progressive lexicon because of Occupy. That's the one thing that I believe that it was able to do, to coalesce progressive ideals into language that people could then move. If not for Occupy, there is no Bernie Sanders movement, and I believe that firmly. Now, Bernie Sanders has been saying this shit, as we know, for 50 years, literally. So it's not to say that he took it and co-opted it. He probably birthed it. You know, he was one of the original people talking with this language. But the Occupy movement brought it to everybody else. And then he became a celebrity from within the movement. For me, at that moment, as a more of an executive and less of a journalist by that time, because, you know, I just had the company to deal with, to be able to go into the field with you guys, and it was literally the four of us. Manny coming in with the multimedia aspect, getting a lot of this stuff on film, helping us get our message out in a different way. That was the beginning of us contemplating that there's another way for us to get our message out. And he was so connected in New York, we could move around really easily. Rashed, for me, that's where you went from, you know, writer to true journalist. This was where you really, you know, cut your teeth and got your chops and then fell so far into that world that you never broke out of it again. You never went back to where you were as a local journalist. You became a civil liberties reporter. And as authentic of and as good of a journalist as you can be in that space. And I think for Chris and I, you know, it showed us that we got to get out of here. We got to break free. There are so many stories and so many possibilities beyond just our little, you know, neck of the woods that it really emboldened us. But it was the four of us in Zuccotti together, yeah, taking all of this in and saying, the world is shifting beneath our feet. Mm.